What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
I think we came out ready to play. I mean, first couple of shifts, we're getting the puck in on them. We're working their D. We're getting a couple of chances right off the bat. And obviously, you always want that to end up with a lead too, but it's not going to happen. You're not going to be up every shift. You know, like the Dallas game where we scored on the power play really early. It's not going to end like that every game. But you just want to build momentum for your team and obviously try to carry that all the way through the first TV time out there, and then just keep building on that.
Well, I think if you take an example of yesterday's game, the first 5 minutes of the game, I thought we were, you know, we managed the puck well. We were able to get in the offensive zone. We had some good shots, some good zone time. I thought we were playing fast and we were in control of the game up to that point. And then, that's really, really getting out and establishing your game and trying to take control of the game right away and put the other team on their heels and put in a situation where you're more in an attack zone, attack setting situation. So, you know, that's what you mean. I think when you hear teams get off to a good start, that's exactly what it is.
That was Philip Forsberg and Predators head coach John Hines talking about getting off to a fast start. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking you through this Tuesday morning. Joe, I thought really in game one, the first 5 minutes or so from the Predators were pretty good. Like, they were pushing the play. They had some offensive zone time. I think Johansson had a good look early on. I mean, they were doing some good things early on. And as we know, we've talked about it a lot. That shot by Oliver Ekman-Larsson from Arizona. Pinballs, it goes off Kyle Turris and Matt Duchene and like the corner of the building and then trickles over the shoulder of UC Saros, and things fall apart from there. In terms of today, looking ahead to game two, the fast start part of it is important in terms of what they were able to do in game one in the first 5 minutes. I think the first goal is important too. I think it's important for this Predators team to play with the lead. I mean, you can have a fast start and play well without converting and scoring. I think it's important today that you get off to a good start and you make Arizona pay for it. You convert, you put some doubt in their mind, and you play with a lead, which should be the strength of this team as is.
Well, yeah, you're right, because they were better 5-on-5 to start. And I always think the first goal is important in this game, but they were better 5-on-5. They got a power play early. It was a good-looking power play. They didn't convert, but everything was going well. And then all of a sudden, everything wasn't going well because of that weird goal. I mean, I can't analyze it any other way other than to think that they were shook by that.
Yeah.
Can't happen. So they would be much better off for scoring first. I would also say, Robbie, that maybe they need to – shake off a first goal. I'm not saying let them score and then prove that you can deal with it, but hey, you don't know who's going to get the first goal. You got to be able to play through whatever it is and just assert the fact that you are the better team. They are the better team. I hesitate to look at like the third period as proof of that, because it's a desperate team coming back from a 3-goal deficit and another team trying to hold on, and that's just how it goes. I think that's way too much is made of that. But I still think that they are better 5-on-5, on paper, on ice, however you want to look at it. So you just – if they score first, I think it bodes well for them. But if they don't, then here's your next chance 2 days later to show that you can deal with this. If you can't deal with these things, you one way or the other, you're not going to be in this thing very long.
No, and look, I don't know why this has become an issue with this group, because I'm so tired of doing this, and I keep doing this so much. I'm so tired of people talking about 2017. 2017 was 3 years ago. You know how long 3 years is in the world of the NHL? I mean, it's an eternity. So everybody around here keeps talking about 2017. That's great. It was fun. It was awesome. This team has nothing to do with that. But one of the things in 2017 that they did really well, they got down. Okay. It just kept going. 2018 as well. Like, when they won the President's Trophy, they came back a lot in that regular season.
They did.
I mean, they just came back. So I don't know why all of a sudden it's become a problem that, like, oh, my goodness, the other team scored. What do we do? Well, let's just sit here for 8 minutes and let them score again. I don't know why that's become a problem with this group. It's been a problem all season long. Before Peter Laviolette was fired, you thought you were fixing it a little bit. Because, remember, a big part of the conversations we had on this show after John Hines was hired was the mental pushback and the fortitude and all these different terms that he started throwing out there. They just didn't have it. And I don't know how that happened or when that happened, but that's got to stop. I mean, you're the second oldest team in these playoffs. When it comes to experience in playoff games, I mean, you're probably – I haven't looked this up. You're probably in the top five. Like, I imagine Boston's up there and Pittsburgh, St. Louis, all these other teams, but you're up there with some of these teams as well. You got to be able to handle these situations better. So you're right. I mean, I think – the start today is crucial. I think getting the first goal for them would go a long way. But if that doesn't happen, if Arizona comes out and they score on their first shot, you got to find a way to just get over it and keep playing your game. If you can do that, I think you're going to be okay against this team. Like, it's not like Arizona is going to come out there and just overmatch them, that they're going to be overwhelmed by the Coyotes. Like, there are teams in the league, like if the Preds go up against Colorado or – you know, Pittsburgh or Washington or Tampa Bay when they're on, yeah, you could probably see in your mind where they at times could overwhelm you with their skill. That's not going to happen with this group. It may happen with Taylor Hall's line. That's about it. That's not going to happen with this group. You get scored on today, you got to respond better.
Right. Yeah, it's – well, and I'm with you on not looking back on that, but the thing is – you can go list all the players who were part of that, and that's the frustration, you know, the whole top line, and obviously Yossi Ekholm-Ellis and Sissons and Watson and Craig Smith. I mean, there are so many guys on this team who were part of that. Obviously some guys who were part of that, and we talked about them yesterday. P.K. Subban.
Yep.
James Neal, you brought up James Neal, mm-hmm. and that's another guy who had – A little bit of nastiness
to him.
Yeah. So some of that maybe rubs off, and maybe this team is too nice. Maybe that's what it is. Collectively, they need a jerk. I mean, who's the biggest jerk on this team?
I don't know.
And I'm saying when I say jerk, I mean like
on the
jerk
ice, heel. Yeah.
Like the jerk you want to be. Like, who would be the biggest jerk?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like,
I mean, probably, I guess maybe like Austin Watson.
Yeah, maybe, but like Austin Watson, if he's playing, is playing
right, he's not,
like
right.
9 minutes a game.
Yeah, you're right. A guy like Forsberg to me.
Yeah, that's who I was going to say.
Can do that.
Yeah.
And frankly, I know you're already like, hey, what can the guy do? He scored twice. You know, he scored two power play goals in game one, but that's a guy who maybe can be a tone setter in that way. P.K. Subban set the tone.
Yeah.
He did. And again, I'm not saying they shouldn't have made that deal. I think it totally made sense. Yeah. We'll see how it works out with DeShane. I'm not second guessing the deal. I'm just saying that's something that they haven't replaced, and I don't know if it's on this roster.
Our good buddy Alex Apple from Fox 17 texting in on the text line says, great show, guys. Had Peck been in net, that first goal would have just hit him in the head. The height difference was the difference, baby. Should have gone with Pekka.
That's right. Yeah,
hit him right in the face, sit over the shoulder.
This is true, that Pekka's height would have stopped the first goal. I would agree.
Maybe that's
with that.
The difference in the game, Joe. They wouldn't have been down in the dumps after that.
Well, listen, I mean, there is something too. When you just naturally cover more of the net than someone else, then it's better, you know?
I mean, we talked about the scouting report for Saros, how like trying to go over the shoulder. Like, I didn't really anticipate it happening that way, but I mean, it went over the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
Great job by the Coyotes scouting department. Just the pinball play.
That's
right. We're going to shoot it off to us.
If you can somehow get it off to Shane's
shoulder,
elbow or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
It's impressive, really.
Yeah. That was I mean, I will say, you know, that's the thing, is that was just freaky. And then it's just 10 minutes of awful, and it's 3-0. And I thought about it later, and I didn't, you know, it was later thinking back, I was like, you know, actually, that was a heck of an impressive performance from Saros to not let that shake him,
yeah,
really. Because I don't – those next two goals, what's he supposed to do on either of those? You got nothing. Keller all alone in the slot. You got, what, 3 whacks at it up front after Taylor Hall is just skating alone. Yeah. Just skating all by himself. He's not that good. Don't worry about 91.
All the guys to leave alone.
Yeah, just let 91 go. I'm sure it'll work out fine for you. So all that happens, and Saros gives up the, you know, the breakaway. But other than, he had some big saves that kept him in it. So I actually came away from that, and it's like, you know, I think Saros, in a weird way, kind of showed why he got the start.
I'll say this about Saros, and it's kind of different from Pecorino, and I don't mean that as a bad thing necessarily, but here's what I'm talking about. I haven't really seen Saros, like, mentally just get rattled. Like, he's always been a guy that may not plays best every game, but you never, like, look at him out there and think, oh, boy, like, he's struggling mentally to get past something. Like, use the Game 7 example for Pekka. After that, like, second goal goes in against Winnipeg in Game 7 and just the flukiness of what was going on there and Pekka's flopping around a net, you're sitting there thinking to yourself, oh, boy, like, this may not go well.
Right.
I never really get that vibe with Saros. Now, I think a big part of what's made Pekka so good is that emotion that he plays with. Like, he's a guy that never gives up on a puck. He's a guy that when he's on and when he's feeling it, we've seen it. I mean, he can single-handedly win games, can single-handedly steal games. And I think him playing with emotion is a big part of his game. You can also see it swing the other way. Saros seems like he's like the same dude all the time. And I don't know if that's better or worse, but it is just something I've noticed with kind of a difference between those two stylistically in the way they approach the game.
Yeah, no, that's a good observation. I mean, I think the third Predators game I covered, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was more, maybe fifth or sixth, I saw Pecorino just annihilate a stick.
San Jose?
Yeah. I'm like, wow, this guy was so mild-mannered, and look what he's doing to that stick right there. But I think that the floor and the ceiling for Pekka are the floor. I think the ceiling's higher, the floor is lower than Saros.
Ceiling is the roof.
There you go.
Our good friend Michael Jordan said. Yeah.
But that's the argument for Pekka too, is that can Saros do things that he can do even now? I don't know. We don't know that, but I would say that Pekka's ceiling, I think, is higher when he's absolutely at his best.
Sure.
He's one of the best in the world. He's a guy who's at least going to be in talks for the Hockey Hall of Fame, you know? But I agree, Saros is sort of a little more even keel, even when he has bad nights. So I don't know what that all adds up to.
Yeah, again, like, I don't know if that's better or worse. It's just an observation that I made. So we'll see how the goaltending situation plays out in the next couple of days. When we come back, there is a gigantic mistake that the Predators made in Game 1 that they cannot make in Game 2. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
From an obviously everyone was concerned with the penalties in yesterday's game. It's been something that we've seen in a lot of these games. What is the thing for leadership just to kind of talk to the team to be sure to be just a little bit to not take penalties during the games?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about discipline, and you're right. We definitely took way too many penalties, and it seems like all the games there's a lot of penalties. So I think going into games, you know that there's going to be a lot of penalties called. So you just got to be aware of your actions. You got to be aware of your sticks. And I think it's definitely something that we need to work on. And it kind of kills the flow of the game. I think yesterday, especially in the second, we were killing for most of the period. And we definitely took too many. So that's something we have to improve on tomorrow.
That was Predators captain Roman Josi discussing the myriad of different penalties that have been called here in the NHL qualifying round so far. Welcome back into Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad. Joe, doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the Predators took way too many penalties in Game 1, including some unnecessary ones. Like, after the first goal, Tenorti immediately goes to the box. with a cross check just for no reason. I mean, the puck's not even anywhere near the guy. Duchesne grabs Clayton Keller for no reason after he got crushed. The puck's in the corner. Mikael Granlund grabbed somebody and had a holding penalty behind the net in the offensive zone. So you're literally as far away from your own goal as you could possibly be on the ice. It's things like that. Even Johansson's retaliatory
don't forget Johansson.
Penalty. Like it that can't happen today. You've got to have some poise about you. I understand, like, penalties are going to happen. Like, you're going to trip somebody every now and then. You're going to hook somebody. And if you're taking penalties because you're working hard trying to get the puck, I can live with that. That's fine. It's going to happen in the world of hockey. It's those undisciplined ones that are just completely unnecessary. That can't happen for the Preds today.
Right. Fabbro had a, you know, tough one. Yeah, I feel bad for him on
and
that.
That's just going to happen.
Mistake. Yeah. It's no big deal. But the retaliatory, the Duchesne one, really, that one was like,
brutal.
Look, you got smoked. Just get up. But, you know, he just
it's hockey. You're going to get hit.
Out.
Get up.
Yeah, and that one is, it just can't happen. But, yeah, like the Tenorti thing felt like a, oh, my gosh, what a terrible goal, and I'm ticked, and I'm going to take it out on someone.
I mean, they showed the replay on his penalty. Puck's not even in the frame. Like, it's not even in the picture. And you just cross-check somebody in the middle of the ice. It's just stupid.
Now that,
and that can't happen.
Now there's a guy who does not have the experience, you know, has not been through this. This is new to him. So you also give someone like that, to me, a little bit more leeway because of that. Like, you know, you're learning experiences. But guys like Duchesne and Johansson, it's like, look, in this situation, you've got to keep your composure. And sometimes you take a hit and you move on. So there have been a lot of penalties. John Hines made that point yesterday. I think, did he say 4.4 per team?
Yeah, per team.
That's
a lot.
That is a lot. So they've been calling a lot of penalties. It almost reminds me of, I know we're going to talk about the NBA later, but like they're calling a technical foul every time someone dunks on someone in the NBA right now, like for taunting. Like, can they have a little bit of fun? But a little bit different in hockey, but I don't know. Is it just because, guys, it's sloppy because – you know, people are just getting back into it, or are the officials actually trying to be a little bit more locked down on stuff early? I don't know. But either way, if you know that's how it's going, then you have to be even more careful.
You do, and that's got to be something, if you're the Predators, that's top of mind today. Because you mentioned a couple years ago that was a big problem for them as well, taking a lot of penalties. Well, the good part about that team was their penalty kill is pretty good.
Yeah.
Penalty kill could take those penalties and then kill them off. This team has struggled on the penalty kill. Now it's gotten better under John Hines. Penalty kill is much better. And I thought in game one their penalty kill was fine, other than the first power play where they just left Clayton Keller all by himself in the slot. Other than that, it was pretty good.
Yeah, very, very
but
good.
But you're playing with fire at that point, because not only are you giving Arizona opportunities to score, but you're just needlessly wearing out your own guys. Like, your best players aren't on the ice. I mean, I know Johansson and Forsberg kill penalties every now and then, but your best lines are not on the ice. Like, Craig Smith had like 4.5 minutes ice time through half the game the other day. Like, that can't happen. You got to get into a flow 5-on-5, and taking these penalties, while, yeah, you may not get scored on all the time by Arizona because their power play is not great, you're just disrupting your own momentum at that point, and it's hard to get that back. And that's what we saw in game one, too. It's hard to get it back.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you've got to keep that down. You've got to give yourself a chance. I just think that 5-on-5, this team is better over a period of time. That should show up on the scoreboard. You got to let it show up on the scoreboard. You know, a year ago, like you said, 2 years ago, it was the penalty thing. Like, why do they take so many penalties? Was all your? I mean, I can still just remember like Lavi cringing as it got asked day after day after day. Because obviously the playoffs are different.
Working on it
in non-pandemic times when it's you're there every day asking questions and a lot of times the same questions. Then last year, like when they got a power play by the end of the regular season, it was like groans in the crowd. it was seriously like it was a total momentum killer for them to get the power play.
Yes,
that. I think today they get on they force penalties and get the man advantage. All of a sudden it's like, wow, these guys have got some things figured out there. But you can't flip it around other than this is an aggressive penalty kill team for Arizona, and you can't telegraph passes and give them freebies like Forsberg did in game one, but you can't take away the advantage you have when these teams are even up by giving them power plays all day.
Joe, we've discussed Matt Duchene, and I thought he was very pedestrian in game one. I didn't think, you know, we talked about the penalty that's happened. We talked about it for 2 days now. It is what it is. But I thought even 5-on-5, there wasn't much there from Matt Duchene. There's another level he's got to get to. Here's what John Hines had to say yesterday on what he's looking for out of Matt Duchene.
Right. You know, I some of it is playing at a good pace. You know, Matt's a quick player. He's strong on the puck. He's an elusive player in the offensive zone. So trying to play fast up the ice to help him and then make strong puck decisions with him and his line mates to allow him to be able to get into the offensive zone or in some rush situations where now he can play to his strengths. I mean, he's got great offensive ability. I think he sees the ice. He's strong on the puck. He's very good down low. But getting in more situations where he can play to his strengths. And I think that's speed up the ice. And then the other part is when you don't have the puck, you know, the intensity level and structure and attention to detail that you need to play with that then helps you be able to get it back and or puts you in situations to be able to transition or play offense better. And I think, you know, I think Matt's done a good job in the power play last night. He had a couple of opportunities, but you know, I think his game is coming, and those are some of the areas that I know he's working on and we're trying to help work with.
So you hear John Hines say that, and, you know, he said strong on the puck a couple of times. I didn't think he was very strong on the puck in game one, and that's got to change in game two. Now, typically he is. Typically he's a guy that once he has the puck, I mean, he's pretty hard to get it from just because the way he uses his leverage and his body and his speed, he's really good at it. Game one, I didn't think that was there. He's got to reach another level in game two. I thought he was very average in game one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of how often he had it in game one.
Not a lot.
You know, I mean, you got to get there first. I mean, that line to me is, we talked about that second period little sequence. Like you said, it, you know, getting in transition. They've got speed. That's their game. It's very much a finesse line. But you got to be in those situations and give yourself a chance to do it. I mean, Duchene certainly was hoping for a tourist pass that probably results in a goal if he gets it during that situation. But he's got to create more himself. So, I mean, how much – I'm trying to think of the last time. I think, obviously, Duchene's had some good moments early on this season. He was lights out right away. But I'm trying to think back on stretches of the season where he stood out. And there aren't a lot of them.
About the first five or six games. But, I mean, he was great the first 2 weeks of the regular season. Then after that, I mean, he was like a lot of guys. He just kind of fell off. I mean, he got hurt. Really was never the same after that. I mean, he got hurt. I think he was hurt for like a game, maybe two games. And then
– what was it? Do you remember?
It was lower body.
Was it lower or upper? You at least
– it was lower.
We used to be at least told lower and upper.
Yeah, it was lower.
Man, that
he was unfit to play for a game.
Yeah. Now it's just the big U.
I hope that's not permanent. But with the NHL, it might be.
Oh, please no.
The best one ever was when Barry Trotz was here. He said the injury was on the body. That was a good one.
Really?
Yeah.
On the body.
I enjoyed that one.
Who was that?
I don't remember, but the injury was on the body. That was
OTB.
Nice. Yes. That's basically what we're dealing with now.
See,
with
now you can't. But that's too specific now.
Yeah. Like, you couldn't even say on the body.
If it's the virus, and
could be,
that's not really accurate, right?
Exactly.
Just unfit.
We're devolving here. We're going the wrong way when we come to injury information in the NHL. When we come back, we're going to get into the mess that is Major League Baseball and the Miami Marlins. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'm hoping that the first question today is about the health of our players who've tested positive, because it really has been disheartening to not read anything about that or see many signs of empathy for what they're going through. Instead, you know, we continue to hear and read about rumors about our players' actions in Atlanta, and we need to stop that. Right? Our team and our players deserve better than that. As I mentioned, these guys are sick. Our guys were not running all around town after our game in Atlanta. So I need to ask that stop. They don't deserve that. We did have a couple individuals leave the hotel. In our review, it was determined we had guys leave to get coffee, to get clothes. The guy left to have dinner at a teammate's house. There were no other guests on site. There was no salacious activity. There's no hanging out at bars, no clubs, no running around Atlanta.
Welcome to Atlanta's hammers and bows, back to the Mackin' and the clothes, adolescents packing up.
Stop talking about our players. That was Derek Jeter with the Miami Marlins discussing the, in his opinion, I guess, unfair criticism of his players after they have contracted COVID-19 and shut down. What are we up to now in terms of games in the MLB? We're in the 20s now, right?
Dang it. Hitting the button. Dang it. Actually, are we into the 30s?
Could be.
I mean, the Tigers-Cardinals just got zapped this week. Cardinals are having their issues.
I don't think we're close to the 20s yet.
We were in the 20s yesterday.
We were like 19 yesterday.
Oh, we're getting there. Okay, I guess 20s. I'm thinking about series. So I'm like,
okay,
the Dodgers played the Giants in the first series, the Astros, then the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
And then now the Padres. So, yeah, I guess it's around that.
Just total.
Now, yeah. Tigers-Cardinals got zapped this week. So that's another I think it was supposed to be a four. Maybe it was a three.
Yeah, just but stopping your Detroit Tigers keep from continuing their run.
Yeah, their big push toward 500, which would be incredible. That's what they are now. Yeah, this whole thing. I mean, look, I guess I understand Derek Jeter's point about empathy, and it becomes this sort of witch hunt on who went to a bar versus, like, hey, is everybody okay? I get that, but – also, responsible behavior is a huge part of this story. And so it's just like with the NFL, anytime something happens, I mean, we just talked about the CBA, the behavior element there. I mean, it's going to be a part of this story. And if college football happens, it's going to be part of that story. I mean, it's just the reality is people are going to be judged on that, and reporters are going to be looking into that.
Yeah, and look, like, this is going to sound harsh, but, like, you're in Major League Baseball. You've got to make some sacrifices. He talked in that clip about leaving the hotel. Like, I've been around MLB players. I've been through, some of these things they do in hotels. One of my best friends used to play in the MLB, and I've been places with him. You get everything you need in that hotel. If you're a Major League Baseball player, you wouldn't believe the food that they give you in that hotel. You would not believe all the amenities that come with that. You're in a global pandemic. You can't be going out to Starbucks or to be getting clothes or going to eat at one of your teammates' houses. Like, you just can't be doing that right now. I understand that's harsh and that's a high standard to hold these athletes to. But part of it is just understanding what's at stake right now and the responsibility you have. So, look, I don't know whether or not Marlins players were out at bars or doing things they weren't supposed to be doing, but you literally just said they left the hotel, and that should not be happening in this situation. Trust me, they got everything they need in that hotel. I promise you, they do. They'll be just fine.
Yeah, like leaving the hotel for coffee?
Yeah, coffee's in the hotel?
Like, I guess my clothes, you know, if you had some kind of emergency, which is just poor planning anyway.
Yeah.
Like, what is absolutely essential? Like, I've got to go, you know, I forgot to pack jeans, you know, but coffee, I promise you, in a hotel Major League Baseball players are staying in, they've got really good coffee for you.
As much as you want.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, this is one of those things. People are going to roll their eyes at his explanation because it sounds implausible. And unless there's actually, like, footage, like with Lou Williams, what we end up getting, do we end up getting footage of Magic City?
Is there Magic City
more Atlanta?
Oh, man. That'd be awesome.
Right? There was something, wasn't there?
Well, I think it was one of the waitresses, let's call them.
Oh, okay.
That was the one that called it out.
Okay.
Of like, hey, NBA player Lou Williams in the building.
Right, initially. But then I thought there was somebody else that also had a little snippet on it. I'll have to look that up. Yeah, I could be wrong on that.
I hope so.
Things fly fast on Twitter.
I hope there is footage.
There was something else after, you know, all the stuff about the wings. But regardless, I mean, if there's not something like that, then, you know, we're not going to know. But The idea that guys would slip out and go get a few beers at a bar certainly is not far-fetched.
It is not far-fetched. And look, we've talked about the responsibility players are going to have with Major League Baseball. I mean, it's going to be the same thing with the NFL. And Taylor Lewan spoke a little bit about this yesterday in his Zoom call. Here's what he had to say.
I think when it comes to that stuff, it's your obligation to be a pro when you're outside of the building. This isn't college football. This isn't high school football anymore. This is not an arena league. This is the big leagues. And so if guys want to be a part of it, if guys want to, take, part in this season, then it's on them to do those types of things. I can't go and micromanage a bunch of guys. I know that for myself, I'm going to be the best pro I possibly can be. I have a daughter that's 15 days old today. So, we're one of those higher risk situations, and I'm just trying to be as smart as possible. And kind of, this is one of the things you have to take care of your own stuff. And, we'll be vocal and make sure that guys are smart and do the best they can. But when they leave this building, it's truly on them. And it's just about being a pro and making sure you're in the right situation and don't put yourself in a position to contract something or be somewhere that you shouldn't be. I mean, this is a business, and this is what we're trying to do is have a football season. It's not about going out.
And I agree with everything Taylor Lewan had to say there. The part I get worried about is, we're having a discussion about Major League Baseball and this happening with them. There's a lot more people on NFL teams that you're going to have to monitor and just kind of be aware of, that you're going to be surrounded by these people. But not only are you going to be surrounded by these people, even if you're in a bubble at practice, like, you're going to be hitting them in practice. You're going to be lining up right across from them. You're going to be covering them on their routes. Like, there's a lot that goes into it with the NFL. So I agree with everything Taylor Lewan said there. I also am very concerned that whether it's somebody going out and just not telling anybody, or, like you said, Joe, going to the grocery store to pick up something essential like baby formula and you end up contracting the virus, like, that's what I'm worried about with the NFL, especially with the close quarters you're going to have to be in terms of practices and games and everything that goes with that.
Yeah, the game itself is not ideal and lends itself to spreading the virus much more than baseball. A couple things in the NFL's favor compared with baseball. One is not as much travel. You got one trip a week, and it's like the whole team, and you know, usually there's meetings night before and all that stuff. So it's more contained, and it's a lot less volume on that. Also, NFL players are cut so quickly and have such short careers and have such little security compared. Like a guy like, whoever, pick a baseball player who, has a lot of money or has a lot of security. There are a lot of guys in that league who can hang around a long time and aren't as, desperate to stay around for this little tiny period of their life and get a pension and things like that. I do think that mindset of a lot of NFL players should result in a lot of guys being as careful as possible, even if it's young, rookie who, has all this money all of a sudden. I mean, obviously it's life-changing money, even if it's, a rookie deal. That's big money. But if you know how fleeting this is in the NFL, no other league is like it in that way. Maybe you have more compliance because of it. I know all these NFL teams sure hope so.
I do want to pass something along very quickly. This is from the Dixon County Emergency Management Agency. A BOLO is out for a stolen Dixon County school bus, number 15-47, tag 389-2GB. And do not let your kids get on that bus. So if you're in Dixon County listening, there is a stolen school bus. Don't let your kids get on that bus if they ride bus number 15-47. This again from the Dixon County Emergency Management Agency.
Would they be getting on the bus today?
I don't know. I mean, I know Sumner County went back to school yesterday, so I don't know.
Wow. Stolen school bus.
Yeah. People are crazy.
Don't hear that every day.
You do not hear that every day at all. When we come back, big NBA news last night, including a local team here, the Memphis Grizzlies, with a big matchup against the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll react to the ramifications of that. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Man, what a competitive game. Both teams, I thought, played extremely well. I thought our defense improved significantly as the game went on. A couple of plays down the stretch, they make tough shots. One or two breakdowns that we can definitely correct.
that kind of swung the game. You know, just our offense has got to be better. You know, we're shooting 39% on 93 shots. We got to give ourselves a chance. I thought we got some great looks. You know, that's something that we'll just overcome. But I love the fight of our group. After a tough start in that first quarter, I think, you know, they got out to 19 points really quick, had to take two early timeouts. Our guys dug in. Our one-on-one defense was a whole lot better. Just got to continue working on, you know, keeping them off the free throw line, getting out and playing with better pace. I thought they really exploited us in transition. But to, you know, keep that team under 110 points, you know, I'm proud of our guys, you know, on a, you know, a high intense game. Just play a little bit better on the offensive end. I think we'll be in a good spot. We gotta stay.
That was Grizzlies head coach Taylor Jenkins talking about his team's 109-99 loss to the New Orleans Pelicans last night in the bubble in Orlando. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroth. And, you know, you could get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. That's two tickets for the price of one for Beach Bend and Splash and Lagoon Water Park that are on sale now. Go to thegamenashville.com and click on the Beach Bend Buy One, Get One free ad to purchase your tickets now for only $37. 99. Joe, a tough loss last night to the Grizzlies, who are struggling in the NBA's return to play in Orlando. 99-109 loss to the New Orleans Pelicans. And it was just a game, Joe, where they had a lot of looks, a lot of open shots, and just couldn't hit them. I mean, Ja Morant finished with 11 points, 5 of 21 from the field, 1 of 10 from three-point land. Just didn't quite have enough, and then I guess last night was the night New Orleans decided they were going to go for it and play Zion a significant amount of time. It finished with 25 minutes, 23 points, 9 of 21 from the field.
Yeah, he was good, although Jaren Jackson also took him. They were taking each other. That was fun to watch, those two. And, yeah, look, if John Morant's going to shoot like that, that was just untimely because I think – a typical shooting night from Ja Morant probably gets them over the hump. They had a couple chances. They took the lead. They came back multiple times in this game. Couldn't finish the job. Man, they are fading right now. They still have the eighth spot by two games over the Spurs and Nuggets. Pelicans now closer, and the Grizzlies' schedule is just brutal from here. I mean, they really couldn't afford to start out the way they have in the bubble because it doesn't get easier. I mean, they have Utah and Oklahoma City. I guess those games, you know, they could win if they play better than they've been playing. Then you finish with Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee. So, I mean, you basically finish with the best three teams in the East.
I know.
Now,
hold on. Let's not disrespect my Miami Heat in front of me like that.
So where are you ranking your Miami Heat?
They're fifth. They're probably like the fourth, fifth best team in the league.
I mean,
they're probably fourth. Okay, continue on.
Yeah. I mean, they're a nice team.
Look, the Raptors, man, they're good.
They look good.
They're really good.
Beat my Miami Heat yesterday. Anyway, continue, Joe, with your excellent analysis.
No, I'm just saying they're in some trouble here. The shot selection at times. Again, you have a night like last night where Ja Morant can't hit the outside shot. He has to do that for you. But they just have some – they're just missing a piece or two. And Dylan Brooks is a good defensive player, and that's why he's on the floor. For people who, like, get him off the floor, you know, his defense keeps him on the floor. He can score. His shot selection is middle school-ish at times. It's bad.
See, the problem with that is then you also possibly have a guy like Jrue Holiday who's – one of the best on the ball defenders in the league.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you're already a struggling scorer and you also have Jrue Holiday guarding you, it's not going to go well for you. But I think what separates the Grizzlies from a lot of the other teams in that Western Conference chase is, like, they're young. And Ja Morant's new to this league. And he needs to work on his three-point shot because when you look at guys like Damian Lillard, when you look at Steph Curry, guys who late in games hit those threes, especially Damian Lillard. If you've seen him in that Blazers-Celtics game,
he's ridiculous.
He was shooting from not even the line, from way behind the line and making them. And he's pretty much automatic when he, you know, is in isolation and he gets some space and he can shoot the three. That's one part of John Morant's game that he's going to have to develop because – let's face it, you can't attack the basket all the time. You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to develop some kind of jump shot.
He's never going to be those guys, McCollum, and especially, like you said, Dame is so great all the way around. I mean, Morant's never going to be that kind of shooter.
But you know, he
can be better. He's got to be better.
But, you know, I thought the same thing about Jimmy Butler early on in his career when he was with the Bulls. I did not think he was going to develop as an offensive player. I thought he was going to be like a Tony Allen-esque, you know, player. He'll get you a few points, but mostly he's going to get you the hustle and the defensive points. That's not on the stat sheet. But he developed an offense, and he eventually, you know, went on to be a star for his team. So I think John Morant can be the same way. When I look at this team, they don't have that guy to go to when they're in situations like this to where they can get them out of it. Like, the Spurs have DeMar DeRozan. Like, he's, you know, despite him carrying a team, you know, he's still a pretty good scorer. You know, when you look at the Pelicans, they got Brandon Ingram, who's probably going to win most improved player, to kind of step up in that time slot to where they're struggling and they get some offense. You know, obviously with the Blazers and Damian Lillard. I just don't think the Grizzlies have that guy yet. They don't have that guy yet. John Morant's going to eventually be that guy, but they don't have him yet.
Well, they need some shooters to go along with him, too.
They do, because there's been times, and, you know, kudos to Grayson Allen, because, you know, Grayson Allen has been, you know, the bright spot of the team. He had 15, I think, in the first game. He had 17 yesterday. So, you know, yeah, you need to surround him with guys like Milton. He needs to hit those open threes. Dylan Brooks, he needs to hit those open threes, especially if you're going to be on the floor at the same time as John Morant.
Put a little respect on Jaren Jackson's name. He's been awfully good. I mean, the shot he hit against Jaren Jackson. San Antonio. I mean, he's a big who can step out and hit that shot.
Yeah, but I mean more so perimeter. Yeah. Perimeter shooters.
Like Josh Jackson is a guy who I've always liked as a player going back to, you know, high school in Detroit. He can't hit that outside shot.
You know?
And it's going to limit him.
And in this day and age, in this league, like if you can't, like you look at the Rockets, for example, they hit like 63s. They attempt 63s a game most of the time. If you're a team like that, and obviously you live by that, you die by that, because sometimes that's not going to work out in their favor, especially if they're not playing defense. But
Which
half of the time they don't.
They will not be doing.
But it's always like you have to surround yourself with at least a couple good shooters. Your whole backcourt can't be a bunch of guys who can attack the basket really well but can't shoot. Your backcourt can't be that way. Like, and that's why a duo like C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard works. That's why Klay Thompson and Steph Curry works. That's why, you know, John Wall and Bradley Beal. Yeah, John Wall's not the shooter, but Bradley Beal is the sharpshooter of the team. And that's why those combos usually always work, because you got one guy that could shoot and then the other guy who could facilitate. And the Grizzlies just don't have that right now.
And that's why
they're young, but they'll develop. And they're young.
They need at least a piece to add.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ja Morant's always a guy that gets compared to Westbrook in terms of, like, athleticism and the way he plays the game, attacking the basket. One thing Westbrook's not great at, shooting a three. Like, he's okay at it, but I think in order for Morant to really make the Grizzlies a threat, and it's not going to happen this year, it's not going to happen next year, it's going to be a few years down the road, he's got to develop a three-point shot that is a threat. It doesn't have to be the main part of his game, at least not now, but it's got to be a threat, because that's just the way the league is going. Like, yeah. You've got to have it.
Because, like, when you look at him, he is a perfect example of someone who can create space.
Yeah.
And for someone who can create – and that's what Damian Lillard is so great at, is he can create space, and regardless of where he is at the three-point line, he going to shoot it. So you better just beware. So I think Ja Morant's so talented at creating space and getting past a defender that if he develops that three-point shot, then he's just going to be a dangerous offensive player. But they already know that, hey – he's going to get past us, but he's also going to go to the paint. So just let's make sure we have a guy waiting for him when he gets there, and because he's not going to pull up and shoot. So he needs to develop that, because if he does, he's going to be a dangerous offensive player. And there were times in that game to where they could have either took a lead or they could have, you know, got back into the game, and he missed a lot of threes, wide open threes at that. So you don't want to turn out like Rondo and where guys just like play off of you.
They're
be like,
playing at the free throw.
Yeah, Rondo's
not
going to shoot.
Well, he's already better than Rondo. I do have my doubts. Like Dame is a guy who's been hitting 30-footers since he was a teen, right? I mean, he's a freak of a – like, you can see how some guys shoot the ball. I have my doubts that John Morant's ever going to be lethal as a three-point shooter. Yeah. I could be wrong. It'd be great to be wrong, but yeah, he can get better at it and work on it. You can't have one for tens. Now the Grizzlies, if they fall out of the eight spot, if they're ninth and they're within four games, they still get to play in a play-in against the eight. They were complaining about the play-in situation going into this, and Now they might need it because they can't win a game.
When we come back, Nashville SC coach Gary Smith will join us. We'll catch up with him. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.